Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 13th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Jackson County Sheriff's Department hosts National Night Out. Dateline, Maquoketa, Iowa. The Jackson County Sheriff's Department will host a National Night Out event on Tuesday, September 13th. The free event will take place from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at Little Bear Park, 400 West Quarry Street in Maquoketa, according to an online event announcement. The annual event, which is designed to promote positive relationships between first responders and the community, will feature food, children's activities, and water games with the Maquoketa Fire Department. Participants are encouraged to bring lawn chairs. Five Flags performance to feature holiday classics, circus performers. A November show at Five Flags Center will feature a mix of holiday music classics and today's greatest circus performers, end quote. Circa Musica will present its holiday Wonderland show on Sunday, November 13th. Five Flags announced Monday. Tickets for the show will be on sale Friday, September 16th at the Five Flags box office and Ticketmaster.com. Featuring the talented cast of Circa Musica, spectators will be dazzled by the acrobats, aerialists, hilarious hijinks, and holiday cheer, states the press release. The show blends the spellbinding grace and daredevil athleticism of today's greatest circus performers with a musical mix of timeless seasonal favorites played live. UD students get taste of produce from new university-run garden. Story by Elizabeth Kelsey, thmedia.com. Standing at a table in University of Dubuque's Barbara and Jack Smeltzer dining hall on Monday, Luca Frederick used a large knife to slice a tomato into small pieces. Andrew Medert, the university's executive chef and director of dining services, leaned over to offer the freshman some advice. It's easier if you flip that over instead of cutting through the skin and work from the flesh side of it, he said. Friedrich was among the UD students who made pico de gallo using fresh produce from a new university-run garden during a sustainable salsa celebration held Monday. The dining center, as well as the cyber cafe in the university's Heritage Center, also offered menu items featuring tomatoes, peppers, and onions grown in the garden at Walter Woods and Prairies, a plot of land north of Balltown that UD purchased in late 2020. Daniel Postma, a UD seminary student and graduate assistant for the garden project, said the garden was sponsored by UD's undergraduate student government and seminary student council. Construction of the garden began in April. Staff and students tended to the plants over the summer, beginning to harvest in August, just before students returned to campus. Dining services staff are now cooking with the fresh produce, which so far has included 730 pounds of ripe tomatoes and nearly 58 pounds of green tomatoes, along with 229 pounds of yellow onions and 64 pounds of peppers. Oftentimes, there's a perception that the growing season and the academic season don't line up. But we're showing that we can still grow food on campus for campus use, and that's important, said Joshua Chamberlain, UD's Stewardship and Sustainability Coordinator. In the dining center next to Friedrich, senior Marcos Gonzalez chopped onions with an expert hand. He enjoys cooking and said he appreciated the opportunity to work with local ingredients. I hardly get the chance to go to Whole Foods or a farmer's market, so that they have this here is great, he said. When it comes to food that's fresh from the garden here, you know there wasn't any tampering with that produce. Eric Nye, environmental specialist at Walter Woods and Prairies, said using locally grown produce is both financially and nutritionally beneficial. The more local you can grow it, the less you have in shipping costs, and the more nutrients-dense those products remain, he said. Postman said officials expect to continue harvesting tomatoes and peppers into October, depending on weather. Then, they will plant cover crops for the winter months, along with garlic, which will be planted around November and should be ready to harvest next summer. Officials also hope to expand the garden and continue to offer opportunities for UD students to work there. "Everybody eats," Postma said. "It's unifying to be able to show them something that impacts them all directly and the skills they will use in life, whether that's cooking or caring for a garden." UD's Bisignano Art Gallery to open for season with abstract exhibit. The University of Dubuque's Bisignano Art Gallery will host a free reception for the inaugural exhibit of the 2022-2023 season, Quiet Power, recent work by Karen Kirka Jensen and Brent Rowley, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Friday, September 16th, in the gallery at Heritage Center, 2255 Bennett Street. Quiet Power, recent work by Karen Kirka Jensen and Brent Rowley, is free and open to the public through Friday, September 30th. The exhibit displays more than 20 abstract paintings by the artists. A reception will take place in conjunction with Tito Puente Jr. and his Latin Jazz Ensemble at 7:30 p.m. in John and Alice Butler Hall, Heritage Center. For more information or to purchase tickets to the performance, visit www.dbq.edu/heritagecenter. Gallery hours are noon to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday during the academic year. The art gallery is also open in conjunction with all major events in John and Alice Butler Hall, Heritage Center. Quiet Power, recent work by Karen Kirka Jensen and Brent Rowley, can be viewed virtually at gallery.dbq.edu. Regent to shift role of Dubuque County Disability Services Coordinator. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. Dubuque County and regional officials plan to change the scope of the county's Mental Health and Disability Services Coordinator position shortly after the unexpected resignation of the job's former occupant. May Hintgen, CEO of Mental Health / Disability Services of the East Central Region, recently told the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors the new position would focus more on working with regional providers to ensure accessibility of services. She said the resignation of County Mental Health / Disability Services Coordinator Ann Cameron Williams was timely, as it lined up with a required review of coordinator positions each September. Each county's coordinator in the nine-county region handles different duties. Dubuque County's coordinator has handled contracting services. Hintgen said she and the region's management team now seek to combine that role with provider relations. Provider relations has traditionally met with providers, given them support, talked with providers about developing new services, then made sure those services were ready to go, she said. Then provider relations would hand that over to contracting to finalize that with the paperwork. For efficiency reasons, we've decided we want to combine provider relations and contracting together. The new role would be the region's access coordinator, bringing two sides of work to make services accessible into one job. We have a very specific goal in our regional strategic plan regarding access to services, geographical distribution, transportation, the amount of providers available, Hintgen said. We have enough anecdotes that crisis services are not timely enough. We want to make sure we have somebody working with our providers to make sure they have the capacity to meet the standards in the law about how soon crisis providers should be available. The role also would handle justice-involved services such as law enforcement liaisons, jail social workers, and jail diversion. When Williams resigned, the region was funding 80% of the Dubuque County coordinator's work, while the county covered 20% for substance abuse services. Supervisor Harley Pothoff said he no longer wants such an arrangement. Quote, "I'm not in favor of the county having any percentage of the employee because after we last amended for the county to cover part of the position, the county had no recourse," he said. "It puts the county at risk for losing money." Supervisor Anna McDonough said she favored the job change but was most worried about the county's appointed disabilities council, which Williams had worked to fill but which has no internal leadership with her departure. "They're doing amazing work," she said. "They are making ripples throughout the community, the region, and the state, with some of the views that they're challenging us with in their data." Hintgen said she would take over leading the group personally until a new county coordinator is hired. Even unopposed, Lundgren remains focused on fundraising to boost Republicans. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. Dateline, Piasta, Iowa. Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, R. Piasta, has lofty fundraising goals this year, despite running for re-election uncontested. She had reached 90% of that goal before her biggest annual fundraiser began Monday night. Lundgren held her sixth annual Shannon's Brews and BBQ event at Trackside Bar and Grill, which she owns with her co-owns with her husband. The featured speaker was Iowa House of Representatives Speaker Pat Grassley. In previous years, the event has hosted high-profile candidates such as now U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson of Iowa during her run in 2020. It has been the public introduction for other candidates, and it has served as Dubuque County Republicans' unofficial pre-general election campaign season opener. This year, Lundgren had plenty to celebrate, given that Dubuque County Democrats officially have called off their search for a candidate to run against her. "I'm just really focusing on helping everybody else this year," she said of her fundraising election efforts. Lundgren pointed to Republican Jennifer Smith running against Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhardt, D. Dubuque, as an example. "We're really excited," Lundgren said. "We've captured for her with redistricting some of my old district, which leans a little more Republican." True to her word, Lundgren spent the majority of her time on the microphone Monday night talking up other Republican candidates running contested races. Smith, Iowa Senator Kerry Colker, R. Dyersville, and Sageville Mayor Wayne Kenneker, who is running for the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors, among them. All three were in attendance. Lundgren says she has a $120,000 fundraising goal this year, since high goals are expected of chairs of committee. She chairs the House Commerce Committee. Since Lundgren is unopposed, she said she will donate much of that to a Republican statewide pool. "That goes to a majority fund to help us stay where we are," she said. Reached by the Telegraph Herald in advance of the event, Dubuque County Democrats Chairwoman Kerry O'Connor said that despite speaking with several potential candidates in recent months, the party's leadership was unable to convince one to run against Lundgren. "Shannon is an incumbent with a good fundraising apparatus in place," O'Connor said. "I had a couple who expressed some interest, but who did not think they had the time left to build a competitive campaign. So we have some good potential candidates in the pipeline, but we're setting them up for success when they do run in 2024. Grassley said in an interview before the event that regardless of whether Lundgren has an opponent, the need for fundraising and gaining voter support is important as ever. "Even in districts that lean red, we all have to do our part to make sure we keep the majority we've had," he said. 60 seats, the Republicans' majority, current majority in the House, just doesn't just happen. Among the event's attendees, local resident Dwayne Cottingham said he appreciated Lundgren and Colker representing him in Des Moines. "I've been out here a long time," he said. "This is the first time I've had a Republican representing me in both the House and the Senate, and I feel pretty good about it." Six-time Olympic medalist to be featured at Dubuque event. A six-time medalist, gymnast, and sexual abuse survivor will be the keynote speaker at an event next spring in Dubuque. Riverview Center announced Monday that Allie Reisman will be the featured speaker at its Evening of Light event on April 20th. General admission tickets for the event will be available starting on January 1. The event is a fundraiser for the nonprofit center that provides services for individuals affected by sexual violence in 14 counties and for individuals affected by sexual or domestic violence in 2 counties in Illinois. The event also will, quote, "celebrate the resiliency of sexual and domestic abuse survivors we serve daily," the center said in an online announcement. Reisman won 3 medals in the 2012 London Olympics as part of the gold medal winning Fierce 5 American team, and she won 3 more medals in the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics as part of the, quote, "Final 5 team that again won the gold medal. Reisman was among the women who publicly spoke about being sexually assaulted by former sports doctor Larry Nassman. On September 24th, Reisman will be featured in a Lifetime Original Speak special, Allie Reisman, Darkness to Light. In an online post, she wrote, "I have worked so hard on this project. It's exciting to see this come to life. Thank you to all the survivors who bravely shared their stories and the experts who shared their knowledge. I hope this helps someone. School board okays Dubuque Soccer Complex sale to Arizona Company. Story by Elizabeth Kelthy C. at thmedia.com. Dubuque Community School Board members voted Monday to sell Dubuque Soccer Complex to an Arizona-based company that plans to construct an indoor sports facility at the site. Just as at the special meeting 2 weeks ago, board members Tammy Ryan, Anderson Sayensi, Kate Parks, Lisa Whitman, and Nancy Bradley voted in favor of the sale to Court One LLC, while Jim Prochaska and Katie Jones cast dissenting votes. The vote followed a public hearing in which more than 30 people spoke, both in support of Court One and in support of Dubuque Soccer Alliance, which has leased the complex since 1993. Court One submitted a bid of $1.8 million to purchase the complex. The company proposes to build a more than $100,000 square foot facility over the two of the complex's soccer fields, featuring basketball courts, volleyball courts, soccer field, a baseball and softball field, and batting cages. Dubuque Soccer Alliance submitted the only other bid at $1.5 million. Many community members and families of soccer players spoke in support of the Alliance's bid during the meeting, sharing concerns that selling the property to Court One could limit the availability and accessibility of soccer to local youth. They noted that the number of outdoor soccer fields would be reduced by the construction of the indoors facility. There's value in having that number of soccer fields in one central location, which would be lost if Court One were to win the bid here, said Matt Naderman. The ability to host tournaments also necessitates multiple fields in one central location. Others touted the history of volunteerism and donations of money and labor that led to the development of the complex. Many emphasized that they support Court One and its effort to bring an indoor sports complex to the city, but that they do not feel soccer complex is the best location for that facility. However, multiple Soccer Alliance board members and other local soccer officials spoke in support of Court One, noting that they have collaborated with company officials over the past few weeks and believe the company will continue to support the soccer community. I believe that their motives are honest and admirable. Their mission and vision align and supplement ours. Their teams will work with us to expand their available soccer facilities, that they will keep as much of the original complex intact as possible. And what sounded too good to be true will actually be something very special that benefits the soccer players and athletes of this community, said Mike Pete, president of Dubuque Soccer Club Board of Directors. Other community members supporting Court One said athletes of sports such as basketball, baseball, and volleyball often must travel long distances to practice and play, and the Court One proposal would offer a local facility for them to do so. Mitch Brown, president and CEO of Court One, confirmed that the company is collaborating with the Soccer Alliance and intends to enhance the available soccer facilities at the complex. By adding indoor soccer fields and adding lights to the outdoor soccer fields, the soccer community will have more hours of soccer play time than they've ever had before in the 30-year history, said Brown. Our number one goal of the project is to impact as many young children's lives as possible through youth sports. Court One officials plan to allow the Soccer Alliance to continue using the property for $1 per year under several conditions, one of which is a requirement that the group continues to maintain the soccer fields. During the meeting, John Denham, Alliance Vice President, said the Alliance has agreed to the basic terms that would allow the Alliance to be a tenant at the complex. School board members expressed their appreciation that Court One and the Alliance are working together. I'm grateful that those who have the vision and the dream of creating a wonderful opportunity for this community not only have come forward with that, but have done so in a spirit of collaboration and honor with the Dubuque Soccer Alliance and various soccer groups, said Bradley. On Saturday, members of the Friends of Dubuque Soccer Complex, which is independent of the Alliance, announced that they had raised $500,000 to donate to the district if the board accepted the Soccer Alliance's bid. Multiple school board members said that the board's bid process had been clear and transparent and that accepting additional funding in relation to the bid at this point would not be equitable. I have a very hard problem when I hear all these things like, if you do this, then you'll get the money. That is not something as an elected official I am comfortable accepting at all, Ryan said. I completely understand that the intent, but the way that this has been presented for me sits very uncomfortably. Other board members noted that the facility proposed by Court 1 would serve athletes of multiple sports in addition to soccer players and families. I think it provides more opportunities for a lot of our students, said Zanzi. I think Court 1 is committed to really helping all of our students and our community. Prochaska reiterated his belief that the contributions by the Alliance and other members of the soccer community developed the complex, quote, supersedes all in his decision to vote against Court 1's bids. I'm in favor of all of the other sports that Court 1 can bring, he said. I wish, though, that you could find another property. Here's some information on a concert preview. Tito Puente Jr. to honor father's legacy as part of UD's show. Story by Megan Gloss at thmedia.com. The event, Tito Puente Jr. and his Latin Jazz Ensemble, University of Dubuque, live at Heritage Center Performing Arts Series. Time date, 7:30 p.m., Friday, September 16th. Site, John and Alice Butler Hall, Heritage Center, University of Dubuque. Cost, $30 to $45 for the public, $25 to $40 for UD affiliates, military and veterans, and groups of 10 or more. First ticket free for UD students, with additional tickets, $25 to $40. Ticket prices increased by $5 at midnight the day of the event. Tickets can be purchased from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday at the Farber Box Office, Heritage Center, University of Dubuque, 2255 Bennett Street, by calling 563-585-SHOW or by visiting www.dbq.edu/heritagecenter. The box office also will be open 90 minutes prior to events. New this season, the Heritage Performing Arts Loyalty System allows patrons to earn rewards. For every $200 spent on eligible events, patrons receive one free ticket valued up to $50 to their choice of eligible events. Tidbits: son of legendary American salsa and Latin jazz musician Tito Puente, Tito Puente Jr. has made a name for himself, fronting a 10-piece ensemble that has become an audience favorite in casinos, performing arts centers, symphony halls, and at jazz festivals worldwide. A free pre-show reception will be from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Bisignano Art Gallery for Quiet Power. Recent work by Karen Kirka-Jensen and Brett Rowley. The exhibit will be on display through Friday, September 30th. Dubuque staff explains steps that led to Boyle advisory. Story by John Cruz at thmedia.com. Late last week, the city of Dubuque announced what ended up being a temporary Boyle advisory for nearly half of the addresses in the community. The advisory, in place from Thursday to Saturday morning, recommended people living in about 15,600 of the 32,897 addresses in Dubuque not drink, make ice, brush teeth, or prepare food with tap water before boiling it. Water Department Manager Chris Lester explained to the Telegraph Herald on Monday what led to the unusual recommendation and what prompted authorities to lift it. Why was a boil advisory announced? On Wednesday morning, city staff were conducting routine water sampling and testing of a water tank at 409 Gay Street, which is used to store water and provide pressure for the city's third water pressure zone. A sample from the tank was sent to the city's testing lab, as it is routine. The testing process takes about 18 to 24 hours to complete. On Thursday morning, one of the samples yielded a positive result for coliform bacteria. Lester said, Iowa Department of Natural Resources protocol required that the tank be isolated and follow-up samples be collected for testing to determine if the city's water system was contaminated. In the meantime, a precautionary boil advisory was issued for residents living within the city's third water pressure zone. The boil advisory was meant to empower customers to make the best choices for themselves until further testing could be completed, Lester said. What happened after the boil advisory was announced? Following the positive test, Lester said, the water tank was isolated from the rest of the water distribution system and additional samples were taken from the tank. More samples also were taken and tested Friday morning from the water tank and from water sources on University Avenue and Clark Drive to determine if any contamination had spread through the water system. On Saturday morning, none of the additional samples tested positive for coliform bacteria contamination, confirming that the initial positive test was not indicative of contamination throughout the city's water system. Shortly afterward, the city announced the lifting of the boil advisory. How often does the city test its water for contamination? About 7 million gallons of water are treated and distributed through Dubuque's water system every day, and the city conducts more than 200 tests per day at the city's water distribution center in order to comply with state and federal regulations. Additionally, Lester said, the city conducts weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual testing of other parts of the water system to spot any potential contamination. This includes 70 tests per month for coliform bacteria. "They are a tremendous amount of things we test for," Lester said. "It's something that we are always doing." Why was there a positive test result Thursday? Lester said the sample that tested positive is believed to be a case of sample contamination that likely occurred during the sample collection process. Lester emphasized that no other sample tested positive for any coliform bacteria contamination, so the city is confident that the water system is not contaminated. "Water department staff are confident in the safety of our water," Lester said. "We are customers too, as are our family and friends, and we take this very seriously. What is the difference between a boil advisory and a boil order?" Lester said the city only has the jurisdiction to issue a boil advisory, which serves as a public precaution for residents if there is a potential contamination in the water system. A boil order only can be issued by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, though it acts similarly as a public request that residents boil their tap water before using any. "How can I best be alerted to future boil advisories if they were to occur?" The city provides emergency notifications and important alerts through the Alert Iowa service, which the city recently transitioned to from the Code Red system. Anyone wishing to register their phone with the Alert Iowa Advisory Service can do so at tinyurl.com/56u9jpm8. VNA to become WIC provider for Dubuque, Delaware counties. Story by Joshua Irvin, thmedia.com. The Unity Point Health Visiting Nurse Association will be Dubuque and Delaware counties' providers for a federal nutrition supplemental nutrition program for pregnant women, new mothers, and their children starting next month. The VNA on October 1 will take over the special supplemental nutrition program for women, infants, and children for the counties from Hillcrest Family Services, which has administered the federal program in Dubuque County for 31 years. The VNA also will become the WIC provider in Chickasaw County. "We're working with Unity Point and VNA to make a smooth transition," said John Bellini, Chief Business Development Officer at Hillcrest. WIC helps low-income pregnant people and mothers by providing a food allowance for mother and child, which includes baby formula and nutrition education, as well as screening and referrals for other health care services. The VNA's WIC staff includes dietitians, nurses, and a dental hygienist. WIC participants are typically pregnant and breastfeeding women, as well as non-breastfeeding postpartum women for the first 6 months after birth and infants and children up to age 5. The benefits program is administered by the Iowa Department of Public Health. There were 1,470 WIC participants in Dubuque County and 174 in Delaware County in 2020 out of 64,368 statewide per IDPH data. The VNA already handles WIC services for Clayton, Alamakee, Fayette, Howard, and Winnishik counties. The addition of the three new counties is expected to double the number of WIC beneficiaries served by the VNA from about 1,500 to about 3,000, according to VNA Administrator Stacy Killian. For coverage of the eight counties, the VNA is receiving a $765,000 grant from the state, according to Unity Point Senior Marketing Specialist Riley Cole. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 13th, 2022. the Iowa Radio Reading Service information for the blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Dale Ambrosi, Dateline, Long Grove, Iowa. Memorial services for Dale Ambrosi, 57 of Long Grove, Iowa, will be at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, September 13th at Cornerstone Baptist Church, Eldridge, Iowa. Family will greet friends on Monday, September 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Cornerstone Baptist Church, Eldridge, Iowa. Dale passed away on Monday, September 5th, 2022 at his home. Chambers Funeral Home, Eldridge, is assisting family with arrangements. Dale was born on December 15th, 1964 in Bellevue, Iowa, the son of Ronald and Doris Kilberg Ambrosi. He married Tricia Gebauer on June 10th, 1995 in Long Grove, Iowa. He graduated from Bellevue Community High School in 1983. He worked for Lovewell Fence for 40 years and farmed in Long Grove. He especially enjoyed spending time with his family and socializing with friends. He never met a stranger. Another large focus of his time was spending time in his shed working on his many projects. He was always willing to help anyone in need and always paid it forward. Survivors include his wife, Tricia of Long Grove, Iowa, sons Austin, Justine Ambrosi, and Connor Ambrosi of Long Grove, Iowa, daughter Carly Tristan Bradley of Eldridge, parents Ronald and Doris Ambrosi of Dubuque, children Beckett, Ruger, Lynn Lee, and Joy, siblings Mark, Linda Mark Schroeder, Lauren Denise Ambrosi, Diane Dave Michaels, and Lynn Amy Brogy, in-laws Beverly Kuppas, Tamala Gebauer, and Trina Tony Blair, and numerous nieces and nephews. Memorials may be made to the family, which will go to Donor Life Iowa. Online condolences may be shared with the family at www.mcginnis-chambers.com. Karen Goner, Dateline Bellevue, Iowa. Karen Debbie Goner, 79, of Bellevue, passed away on Saturday, September 3rd, 2022, surrounded by her family. The funeral mass was last week at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Bellevue, Iowa. Jay Hantelman, 75, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed on to eternal life on September 8th, 2022. Now there's no more pain and sorrow as he defied many odds. We said goodbye with tears of joy, sorrow as the angels took him away. The wake for the family and friends will be at Catholic Church of the Resurrection in Dubuque on Wednesday, September 14th, 2022, 8:30 a.m. to 10:15 a.m. Mass are required. Funeral Mass, 10:30 a.m. In lieu of flowers, Mass is accepted and said for the repose of Jay's soul. American Legion Post No. 6 will afford military honor ceremony with flags, taps, and rifles. He lived his entire life in Dubuque except for his Navy, Vietnam years. Son of the Fred and Mary, he'd never abandoned, he raised solo his precious three children, Carissa Dean, Sarah Dave, Heather Phil, and grandchildren, Trevor, Cassidy, Charlie, and the happiest, smiliest child Charlene ever saw, baby Jay's godson, Sammy. He married Charlene in the Catholic Church in 2001, over 20.34 years ago. Early on, their anniversary was three-day trips. It's what you make of it. Charlene just desired love, trust, and respect. She desired their 25th anniversary. Jay prayed for 10 more years. He told her, quote, she was the best thing that ever happened to him. And she worked harder than the rest put together. People don't work like that. She replied, they do where I come from. He told her, I had married right this time. I don't know of anyone who'd do for me what you do. All that she did for him, he hoped when her time comes that she'd have someone to take care of her that way. He told one doctor he wanted her there because she was the brains of all of the medical. He said he hated to leave her behind. Charlene asked God why this was his plan, but she refuses to lose her faith because of God's devastating plans and what Jay had to endure. Heartbreaking. He loved God to the end. He felt going to Catholic school, getting to heaven, kindness, and being healthy without despairing earthly struggles as a plan. He forgot the Our Father, remembered the Hail Mary and the Glory Be through all of this, and asked Charlene to help him each day with it. But it only took two times. This last week All were with him by saying it, kids, brothers, cousins, etc. So many true friends were by. He attended Catholic school, kindergarten, college, receiving his associate's degree at the Tri-College Program, Loris Clark and University of Dubuque. Finished after Vietnam with the GI Bill, attending University of Dubuque's flight program. He had to quit because of family obligations. He was honored as a veteran with the UD's Veteran Center 9/16/17. He kept his pilot's license to the end. He played bass guitar in a band till Vietnam. He served his country 4 years honorably for all of us with duty and respect. He served several places shipping out to Vietnam on his birthday. He was a planes captain of the ship Sky aircraft. He fixed and refueled the planes, flew mail, very important to vets, from the Midway, 2.5 years on it, to his land base in Da Nang. Flew some night missions in South Vietnam and Thailand. Flew pack pilots, spare parts, replacement personnel, and one stretcher patient. Was a VIP transport, was in color guard for chief of Jay, was the plank owner of the Midway. He and Charlene are lifetime charter members of Squadrons of Shipmates Incorporated and a St. Lowell member. He was a Catholic Church of Resurrection parishioner since 1975. He fought bravely the fight, lost the race, but kept the faith. Forever was not long enough. Elsie M. Althoff, Earlville, Iowa. Elsie M. Althoff, 94, of Earlville, died on Sunday, September 11, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th at Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 15th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Earlville. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Dorothy A. Chesney, Dateline, Zwingle, Iowa. Dorothy A. Chesney, 97, of Zwingle, died on Sunday, September 11, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 15th. Joanne M. Steger. Joanne M. Steger, 82, of Dubuque, died on Sunday, September 11th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 15th. At Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 16th at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church in Balltown. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Donald A. Gupfert, Bellevue, Iowa. Donald A. Gupfert, 80, of Bellevue, died on Saturday, September 10th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Thursday, September 15th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Bellevue, where services will follow. Hockman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Bellevue is assisting the family. Deborah S. Alt, Dateline, Seattle. Dr. Deborah Susan Alt, 68, passed away on June 5th, 2022 at her home in Seattle, Washington, surrounded by family. Deborah was born July 6, 1953 in Dubuque, Iowa to Dr. Louis Peter Alt and Dora Mildred Peter Alt. She attended Nativity Grade School and then Wallard Catholic High School. Graduating in 1970, she went to University of Iowa, both as an undergraduate medical student, graduating from medical school in 1979. She did her internship at University of North Carolina and residency in otolaryngology at the University of Louisville, graduating in 1988. She married Dr. James Bucher at St. Raphael's Church in Dubuque. Both Deb and James began practice at Cedar Rapids, later moving to Peoria, Illinois, where they had two children. After a number of years, she and Jim moved to Pasco, Washington. Deb and Jim separated and the children went off to college. Deb then moved back to Iowa to be closer to her aging mother. She lived in Cedar Rapids and practiced at the Veterans Hospital in Iowa City. After her mother's death, she moved to Seattle to be close to her children, who were living there. Deb loved to travel, garden, hike, sew, and cook. Her boys were bright spots in her life. She survived by her sons, James Edward Butler, fiancé Laura, and David Christopher Bucher. Deb was the first of the 8 adult children to pass. She survived by siblings, Dr. Edward Stephen Patricia Alt, L. Peter Cynthia Alt, Catherine Orme, Dr. Robert Alt, Valerie Rogers, James Alt, Thomas Alt, Jennifer Rinden, Consonel, many nieces and nephews, Stephanie Tolson, Laura King, Alison Armstrong, and many others. Deb was preceded in death by her parents, Louis and Dora, brothers-in-law, Simon, Ormy, Jack Lawrence, and many aunts and uncles. She donated her body to the University of Washington for medical research. Here are some funeral services. Thomas Burkhart, Dubuque. Visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, September 21. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 22. St. Columbkill Catholic Church. Sally J. DeMuth, Savage, Minnesota. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 15. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Service, 7 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Constance Fessler, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation 10 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, September 17th. Lord of Life Lutheran Church, Dubuque. Service 10:45 a.m. Saturday at the church. Jean E. Heer, Dubuque. Visitation 3 to 5:45 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Service 6 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Cynthia L. Napper, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 15th, and 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, September 16th. Martin Schwartz, Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster. Service 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. Doris L. Phillips, Galena, Illinois. Service 11 a.m. today for Long Funeral Chapel, Galena. Jerry E. Ryan, Dubuque. Visitation 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, September 16th. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Pauline Smith, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 9:45 a.m. Wednesday, September 14th. Immaculate Conception Church, North Buena Vista, Iowa. Massive Christian burial, 10 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Amy Marie Spahn, Dubuque. Massive Christian burial, 1 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th. Clare House Chapel, Mount Francis Center. Carol Sproul Busan, Galena, Illinois. Committal service, 11:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 14th at St. Michael's Cemetery, Galena. Here's a look at some other news, including local law enforcement reports. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Atari Lang, 25 of 1665 Bees Drive, was arrested at 2:20 p.m. Monday at the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging child endangerment causing injury. Mike A. Gardner, 30 of 764 Alpine Street, was arrested at 7:52 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of domestic assault, impeding airflow, domestic assault with injury, interference with official acts, and possession of marijuana. Court documents states that Gardner assaulted La Torina L. Casey, 22, at their residence on Sunday. Fern D. Miller, 51, of 365 Saunders Street, was arrested at noon Sunday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging assault causing injury. Court documents state that Miller assaulted Jennifer A. Hollister, 43, of 17163 Pepper Lane, inside a vehicle, on July 22. Robert J. Lewis, 46, of 2929 Brook Road, was arrested at 7:54 p.m. Sunday at his residence on a charge of domestic assault with injury. Court documents state that Lewis assaulted Gary J. Lewis, 73, at their residence on Sunday. Giant Wash, 1887 Elm Street, reported $1,000 worth of damage to a vending machine at the business about 10:30 p.m. Saturday. Authorities say Grant County man arrested for third OWI after crash. Dateline Platteville, Wisconsin. Authorities said a Grant County man was arrested for operating while intoxicated for the third time after he crashed his vehicle Saturday. Matthew Bonner, 26, of Lancaster, was taken by ambulance to a local hospital, then later booked into Grant County Jail, according to a press release issued Monday by the Grant County Sheriff's Department. The crash occurred at about 8:05 p.m. Saturday on Wisconsin 81 near Platteville. The release states that Bonner was westbound when he reported, swerving to miss a deer and then left the roadway, traveling about 150 feet in the ditch before coming to a stop on a drainage gate. Authorities say Grant County man arrested for burglary theft. Dateline, Buskobel, Wisconsin. A Grant County man was arrested last week for allegedly breaking into a building and stealing property. Robert P. Goodman, 27, of Boscobel, is charged in Grant County Circuit Court with burglary, criminal damage to property, theft, and possession of drug paraphernalia, with each charge carrying a, quote, repeater enhancement, as well as operating while revoked. A press release issued Monday by the Grant County Sheriff's Department states that deputies responding to a rural Boscobel residence to investigate a possible burglary in progress found Goodman. The investigation showed Robert came to the property without permission to pick up some of his property, the release states. Robert forced entry into an outbuilding and took some of the property that belonged to the property owner. Two local school districts holding special elections today. Dateline, Delhi, Iowa. Voters in a pair of local school districts will head to the polls today to vote on facility-related measures. Voters in the Maquoketa Valley Community School District are being asked to approve a physical plant and equipment levy of 67 cents per $1,000 of assessed value of taxable property for a 10-year period. If approved, funds from the levy would be used to address building issues at schools in Delhi, Earlville, and Hopkinton. Plans include new security cameras at school entrances, tuck pointing, and LED lighting in classrooms and hallways. In the Edgewood-Colesburg Community School District, voters are being asked to approve $12.5 million in general obligation bonds. If approved, funds would be used for upgraded heating, ventilation, and air conditioning at the elementary building, a new gym, career, and technical education space, and secure entrance at the high school, among other uses. Polls will be open 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Information about polling locations is available at bit.ly/3QF63HS. Dubuque group to hold rally opposing Iowa gun amendment. A Dubuque rally against a proposed constitutional amendment will be held later this month. The Dubuque Coalition for Nonviolence will hold the rally from noon to 1 p.m. September 24th on the new Dubuque Dream Center playground, 1600 White Street, according to a social media post. Guest speakers at the rally will be Esha Bolar, co-director of the March for Our Lives Iowa, and Kate Parks, president of the Dubuque Community School District Board of Directors. The rally will be held in opposition to the Iowa Right to Keep and Bear Arms Amendment, which is on the November 8th ballot. The ballot describes right to keep and bear arms as a, quote, fundamental individual right and requires any restriction on gun rights to survive, quote, strict scrutiny. BizBuzz. New Holistic Healing Center open in Dubuque. Manchester Event Center changes hands. Owner of longtime Dubuque catering company to retire. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares tidbits from across the tri-state area. This edition highlights developments in Dubuque and Manchester, Iowa. A new Holistic Healing Center has opened in Dubuque. Higher Self Holistics Metaphysical Center opened in August at 3003 Asbury Road, the previous location of Captured on Canvas. The store sells items such as jewelry and crystals and offers services such as meditation. I've wanted to be a teacher since I was 5, said owner Stacy Meyer. Now here I am teaching people about crystals. It's fun to have people come in and say, what stone do I need for this? Meyer said she became interested in the properties of crystals more than 10 years ago while she was going through some health issues. 7 years ago, she began exploring oils and herbs as well. She previously worked for Center of I Am, a Dubuque holistic healing center that closed at the end of May after 7 years in business. When Center of I Am closed, a lot of people felt lost, Meyer said. They said, where am I going to get my stuff? And I felt like Dubuque still needs this, and I can't let this go. While Meyer is the center's only employee, the center has several vendors that make items such as jewelries and oils. Meyer's sister, Teddy Domingue, also makes jewelry sold in the center. Meyer also has 4 facilitators who help provide services and rooms at the center. One room has space for small yoga, meditation, and sound healing sessions, and another room is meant for tarot card readings and aura readings. The center also holds free once-a-week workshops on topics related to holistic healing, Meyer said. Last week, the workshop centered on the properties of different herbs. A lot of people recognize me from the Center of I Am, Meyer noted. Some of them come in and say, "Oh, I was hoping for you." But 70% of the people so far have been all new faces, which is nice. Higher Self Holistics Metaphysical Center is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. Sunday. The store can be reached at 563-207-8658 and found online at Higher Holistics business site. Manchester Event Center changes hands. A Manchester event venue is under new ownership. The Gathering Place, 1711 North 2nd Street, now is owned by Phil and Abby Holtz as of September 1. The couple took over the business from Don and Kathy McGurdy, who had put the business up for sale. "We actually kind of live out by the Gathering Place, so we drive by it every day," Abby Holtz said. "We said to ourselves, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to take a look and see what it is. It's a nice building with a lot of potential," and we started brainstorming. Abby Holtz, who also owns retailer New to You in Manchester, said the space can host events for gatherings of 500, 600 people, and the option to put up dividers for smaller gatherings is available. The venue hosts events such as weddings and parties for birthdays, anniversaries, graduations, and retirements. The Gathering Place also offers catering services, and Holtz said the business is, quote, very well known for its potato salad. She said she and her husband plan to make some updates to the venue in the future, but plan to keep both the event center and catering services. "We hope the community can trust us to give them a nice space to have all their special occasion needs," she said. "We're really excited." The Gathering Place can be reached at 563-927-2995 and found online at thegatheringplacemanchester.com. Longtime Dubuque caterer to retire. The owner of a longtime Dubuque catering company plans to retire soon and hopes to sell the business. Craig Spielman will retire as the owner of Creative Catering by the end of the year. The business is run out of the Windsor Park Retirement Apartments building, 801 Davis Street. "The pandemic changed so much," said Spielman, 59. "They had something to do with it. I'm looking for a change. We would like to have someone take on the business." Spielman's family has a long history of working in the food industry in Dubuque. He said his parents, Charles and Helen, started Spielman's Lounge in 1978 on Windsor Avenue and later bought a supper club called Spielman's Supper Club. The catering business began in 1996 where Pete's Thai Kitchen currently is located on East 22nd Street before moving a year later to Windsor Park. For the first 12 years, he said, he also ran a restaurant called Garden Room Cafe out of the space. As part of Creative Catering, Spielman added that the business also has served lunch to Windsor Park residents for the past decade. "I really love the cooking part of it, working with fresh ingredients and just creating dishes that really make people satisfied," he said. Spielman said he hopes someone will take over the business. "If someone doesn't take over the business by December 31, Creative Catering will cease operations. I really don't know what I'm going to do," Spielman said of his retirement plans. "It seems like now a lot of people in that 50 to 60 age range group are seeing that now that life is short and want to get out and do something that they want to do." Creative Catering can be reached at 563-582-5100 and found online at creativecateringdbq.org. Free event returning to Dubuque Steeple Square this month. A Free Dubuque Festival is returning this month following a two-year hiatus. Steeple Square Community Fest will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. September 25th at Steeple Square between 15th and 16th and White and Jackson Streets, according to a press release. The release states that the event will feature live DJ music, food, drinks, inflatables, games, dance troupes, and mascots. Tours of Steeple Square will also be available. The festival was not held in 2020 or 2021 due to COVID-19. Visit fb.me/e/3pcfrioub, email events at steeplesquare.com, or call 563-235-3584 for more information. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, September 13th, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website iowaradioreading.org anytime. Thank you for listening.